So I'm going to go around and say hi to everyone, but I will just give you a clue. If you don't already know this about Zoom, it depends on what you're viewing it on, but if if gallery view feels too overwhelming, there's a speaker view option at the top, which means you will only see whoever is speaking. And so it's a little less distracting sometimes. But I will go around and say hello to Dawn T. And Claire. And Gaffel. And Mark Cole. And Kathy. And Shokatsu. And Paul. Warren. Bruce, Jinryu, Bob K, Karen, and Katie, Dave, Tyler, Sydney, Jeannie, Franklin, Yeshesoki, John, and Don H. And Jill and then Sam, Marv, Drew, Marcia, Bridget, Kyle, and Ruth Ann. All right. Well, welcome everyone to our class. And let me see, in terms of announcements, we do have a one-day retreat on a Saturday in October. We will have a Sagaki ceremony on November 1st. That's a Sunday. And more news coming up about that. We're going to improvise and it'll be on Zoom for the first time, so we'll see how that goes. That is a remembrance of people who have, part of it is a remembrance of people who have died in the last year or have never been remembered at Sagaki. So if you have anybody who you would like remembered, their names are read out loud, and they haven't already been on our merit list, then go ahead and send those names to me by email, and I will add them to the list of folks we will remember at Sagaki. And we've decided, which I will be in the newsletter this week, to have online Rohatsu that Shintai and I will lead, and hopefully Joshin, our third, Shintai and Joshin are teachers out at YE Zen Center, and when we do session, we often collaborate on session when we do it in person. So I think both of them and perhaps the YE Sangha will be involved as well, but they haven't consulted about it yet. But we'll do something, and it will start at the very sane hour of 6:30 in the morning, as opposed to most session, which start at like 4:30. And go to about 9 p.m. and go from Monday evening through Sunday. I think that's December 7th through the 13th. And you can participate as you are able. You can participate for some of those days or part-time or something like that. But at least some of us will be trying to set aside that whole time and trying to go offline. Is one of, depending on if whether you have work or not, can be one of the easiest and most radical things to do, is just to go offline for that long. So more news on that later. Any other announcements anybody can think of? All right. So tonight we're starting our series on this book by Norman Fisher, The World Could Be Otherwise: Imagination and the Bodhisattva Path. And it talks focuses on the six paramitas. And the chapter that we're starting with tonight is chapter one, called Imagination. And we're just doing the first half of the chapter. So essentially each week we'll cover half a chapter. Not only is there not then too much reading, then we can focus on whatever he said in that half of the chapter. So tonight's just on the first half of this chapter called Imagination. And the way that I'm planning to do this class is, you can change your mind about participating if you want, but I'm hoping that it will be more like you are involved in a class at a university or something, as opposed to just listening to a lecture. And not in the sense that it would be academic, but in the sense that that I hope that our class sessions will be participatory. So they will involve some breakout rooms and some questions and some activities and stuff like that. So that hopefully, and I apologize, because these evening classes of ours, especially if you're on the East Coast, are quite late. I appreciate that. So to make you think at this time of night is kind of cruel in some ways, but you know, there it is. This is the best time for us to meet. So tonight's topic is imagination. So it's very interesting that, you know, Norman writes this book, which is on the Bodhisattva path and imagining a better world, particularly by practicing the six paramitas. But he has one chapter on each paramita, but then he has this chapter on imagination at the beginning. So it's a very interesting, that's not a term that we tend to use in Buddhism with, it's not a quote unquote Buddhist term. So it's very interesting that he approaches it like this. And he starts with a story, which I'm going to read, and then we're going to reflect on. So he says, here's a story about how imagination changes the world, even in the worst possible circumstances. It involves the French surrealist poet Robert Desnos. Desnos was Jewish. During World War II, he went underground to fight for the resistance. He was captured and sent to the concentration camps. One day, along with many other men, Desnos is crowded onto the bed of one of the trucks that transports prisoners from the barracks. The men fully understand where they are going. The trucks always leave the barracks full and return empty. Their destination is the gas chambers and the ovens. No one in the truck bed speaks. The mood is resigned, stricken, eyes lowered, faces grim. When the truck arrives, the prisoners slowly and silently descend, as if in a dream. The guards, normally full of jokes and banter, fall silent, unable to avoid catching the prisoners' mood. But this almost religious silence is abruptly interrupted. One of the men in the line of prisoners suddenly, with great animation, jumps up, pivots, grabs the hand of the man behind him. Astonishingly, his nose almost touching the man's hand, his body coiled tight with energy, he begins to read the man's palm. "I'm so excited for you," he exclaims happily. "You are going to live a very long life. You are going to have 3 children, a beautiful wife, wealth. So fantastic, so wonderful." His excitement is contagious. First one man, then another, in shock and bewilderment, thrusts out his hand. Each one receives the same sort of prediction. Long life, children, wealth, exciting career, beautiful surroundings, peace, happiness, success, joy unending. As Desnos reads palm after palm, the atmosphere of the moment, drop by drop at first, and then, as if in a subtle sudden tidal wave, breaking all at once, completely transforms. The prisoners are smiling, laughing, clapping one another on the back, their burden lifted, their reality transformed. Even more astonishingly, the guards are also affected. Like the prisoners, they have been living in a dark spell in which the marching of men to slaughter was a normal and acceptable everyday occurrence. But now, with this absurd and unprecedented event, this sudden and gratuitous evocation of an alternative reality, the spell is broken. The guards are disoriented, confused. The reality they had been living a moment ago has been somehow cast into doubt, all but shattered. They are no longer sure what is real and what is not. Perhaps their better natures, long suppressed in an effort to conform to the Nazi madness that defined their world, long numb to the grief, the guilt, the horror, were stirred by Desnos's powerful commitment to his absurd, but perhaps not absurd, vision. Who knows? And they are, in any case, so undone by the jolly scene in front of them that they no longer know what to do. They can't go through with the executions, so they march the prisoners back onto the truck bed and send them back to the barracks. Through this spontaneous exercise of imagination, precisely the sort of move Desnos constantly makes in his poetry, he and these men were saved from execution. So then Fisher goes on to say that when he heard this story, he was so captivated by it, so inspired by it, and he was carrying it around like a koan, but found himself also thinking, like, did that really happen? And he was kind of mulling over it. He asked some of the people who were involved, do they think it really happened? And then at some point he came to a point where he just said, this is true. You know, like, in a way, it doesn't matter if that particular thing happened. It reflects a kind of truth. So, excuse me. I want to go into breakouts and suggest, so I'm going to put these questions into the chat. So there should be plenty of you, for you to refer to. So when you go into the breakout rooms, I think those of you on computers will still be able to read what is in the chat. If you're just on a phone or something, I think you lose it. But let me open that. Open my document here. So I can copy and paste faster than typing it in. So why does Fisher start his book off with this story? This book is on the Bodhisattva path, imagining a better world, the six paramitas. So why does he start off with this story? What is its significance? And then I recommend going around in your room for each person to reflect on that question. And if you run out of that question, then the question, what does he mean when he says the story is absolutely true? And then, if you happen to get past that as well, if the story is true and most of the people involved ended up just being taken to the gas chambers another day, if it isn't this story of miraculous rescue, was there any good done? What was the good? What was the significance of this event if it didn't necessarily have this miraculous outcome? So, I will invite you to your rooms. Actually, let me recreate so you're not with the same people that you chatted with for. There we go. Well, maybe six is too many. Hold on. There we go. Choose a spokesperson to bring something back. So, guess I have to put you on the spot, but I guess anybody hear anything or share anything in their group that, you know, yeah, that's true. Like, please go ahead and unmute yourself and share some of what you experienced in your group with the rest of us.
Can I offer something? I didn't actually get a chance to talk in my group, but I had something interesting to point out.
Yeah.
I heard a podcast by Norman Fisher introducing the Lotus Sutra, but he introduced it by talking about this book. And he said, actually, this isn't the title he wanted. The editors changed it. The title he wanted was The World Is Otherwise. The editor said nobody would understand that.
Ah.
But I think you could read the book both ways. The world could be otherwise in terms of how you can change it, but the world is otherwise in terms of how you can see a side of it that being too pragmatic hides from you. And I think for me, what he's getting at in that the world is otherwise, my favorite quote from the chapter, imagination expands the heart, causing us to understand others as ourselves and ourselves as not belonging to us. Only the imagination is deep and wide enough to open us to the profound healing in which we feel in ourselves the feeling of others.
I like it. Any other gems? Ruth Ann?
Oh, I'm so glad that was shared about the title Fisher wanted, because that's huge. When the world is otherwise, it reminds us we're in the driver's seat of where we place our thoughts and our energy. And just like Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, it's like we don't have to buy into the gunk around us, even though we have to reset it all the time. So I'm so glad that was shared. Mm-hmm. And thank you for the opportunities.
Thank you. So another description that I really liked that he did of imagination here is on page 4. And he talks about, you know, the news media as our collective nervous system, and it becomes the stuff of our psyches and conversations. What will the future bring? What's the world going to be like for our children and grandchildren? Will there be a world? Dread fills the air. Sometimes we feel it. Mostly we don't let ourselves feel it. It's too much. What can we really do about it? I am convinced that the world could be and actually is otherwise. That its possibilities need not be and actually aren't limited to the tangible, the knowable, the negotiable. To the data we are constantly collecting about practically everything measurable. Data gives us the illusion that we know the world, but the world is more than we know. The imagination doesn't measure, devise, or instrumentalize. It doesn't define or manipulate. Instead, its nature is to open, to mystify, to delight, shock, inspire. It extends without limit. It leaps from the known to the unknown, soaring beyond facts to visions and intensities. It lightens up the heavily circumscribed world we think we live in. It plays in the deep end, where heart and love hold sway. So, our next activity is something we could only do on Zoom with all of us being in our homes. So I'm going to invite you to take about 10 minutes to walk around your house looking for something you have collected or created because it captured or inspired your imagination. A book, a poem, a piece of art, a craft that you made or you collected, a tool you use for an activity that inspires your imagination, captures your imagination. And don't take too long looking for the perfect item that sums up everything that matters to you, or worrying about whether it perfectly fits my definition or will measure up to anybody else's item. Just pick something that inspires, something that presents a vision of a better world, or a vision, as we were saying, of what is precious about this world. Something that, I don't know if everybody relates to this, but gives you a sense of expansiveness in your chest. When you read it, when you encounter it, it kind of opens up that realm of possibility. And if you find your thing or you know what you're going to bring, you can just come back and sit with it for a while and reflect on what you would like to share about it. And no one will be required to share, but I encourage people to do so because I think this will be really cool and fascinating to get a little piece of imagination from each person. And just think if it's a book, maybe a short passage, or if it's a poem, you know, a short poem or part of a poem, or if it's a piece of art, we can show and tell, something like that, and share something that captures your imagination. So it is 8:33. So at 8:43. Come back in session. I don't know if anybody is still out looking around. Some people's videos aren't on, so I'll just have to guess. There we are, 8:43. It's fair. Okay, so I'll put you into rooms, and if somebody can keep time, that would give each person about 4 minutes. So just in your group of four, please pick somebody to keep time, and then give everybody a little piece of your imaginative vision. It was pretty cool. Well, I hope everyone is leaving with a little bit of that sense of inspiration that was reflected in that story at the beginning of Norman's book. And I really feel like He's on to something there in terms of pointing out the importance of imagination, and it really makes me think about how we don't use that word, but to some extent, you know, Buddhism is still arriving in the West. It's still arriving in English-speaking countries. So maybe we need our own ways to describe it, and it's like in order to break out of what I've often said, you know, we talk about letting go of our mental map and letting go of our preconceptions of the world, our established narratives, preconceived notions. But to some extent, like, it takes, and almost phrasing in a positive way, it takes imagination to do that. Because in a way, we can still be so constrained by our own ideas that we actually need to break out of it with imagination. So I will just end then. Thank you, everyone. Dedicate the merit of this practice session with Sangha to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Hey, Claire.
Good night.
Can you give me the name of the poem you read?
Thanks, everyone.
Yes, yeah. No, I put it in to you in the chat.
Oh, you did? Oh, cool. Oh, I see it. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Hi, Domio. Thanks, Domio.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Domio.
Bye, Marcia.
Bye, Jinryu.
Bye.
Good
bye,
night, everyone.
Good night.
Sweet dreams.
Yes.